Why don't we get started? There will be a couple of more people to come in, probably through that door. And we're going to go ahead and get started. I'd like to offer a word of prayer, and then we'll just kind of jump into this. Lord, we're thankful for a good day, for a day of just hearing various speakers and seeing old friends and meeting new ones, and for a day in which many of us have been able to get away from our regular task and work and to come to this nice place where we can think and just enjoy and ask your blessing on our time together. In Jesus' name, amen. My name is Jim Martin, and I work with Harding School of Theology. I'm a vice president of the university over the School of Theology, and been doing that since January 2014, and been preaching for 38 years. Was in Waco, Texas, 20 years before moving to Memphis, and was in Kansas City 3 years before that, North Alabama almost 8 years before that. So everything I want to share with you basically comes out of a lot of those experiences and comes out of our own family, trying to just find out what it means to be a family and work in a church environment and have children. We've got two daughters. They're women now, but they were little girls at one time. And so one of the things we had to deal with was how to serve a church when we had no children. That was one chapter. How to serve a church when the kids are little and you always have something everyone can talk about as you hold them up and everybody's oohing and aahing over your children. How to have a church when ours are in middle school and high school. And that's kind of an interesting, or how to have a family when ours are in middle school and high school and be a part of a church. And then for a number of years, Charlotte and I experienced learning how to be a family when we have no children at home and they're all grown up. We've moved to Memphis, and we're now in the strangest situation where I'm preaching at churches and they never saw me parent a child. They never saw anything that we did. They never saw us deal with any issues with our children. They just see some gray-haired guy and his wife who looks just right. So it's a different phase to be in. What I'd like to do is I just want to talk about some very common challenges of people who work with churches. Some of you came in. I don't know who came in, but I just heard the door. Thank you so much. I want to talk about just some very common challenges for anybody who works with a church. You guys have been doing this. We all have been doing this all day. We're sitting and listening to people talk. And so what would be helpful, maybe, Jordan, you might get a copy right there. What would be helpful is if you jot down some notes, look for a couple of nuggets that are helpful. And we've had a pretty good 45 minutes, okay? A few notes, a few nuggets, we're done. All right. Here's some challenges. Number one, expectation challenges. Expectation challenges. And the challenge of determining what expectations are realistic and what are unrealistic. In a congregation, who will offer those expectations? The membership will offer those expectations. Sometimes it'll be the elders who have those expectations. Sometimes it'll be fellow ministers, staff people who offer those expectations. When you follow someone, depending on what that person was like, there will be certain expectations. if you follow a person and they're really unhappy with that person, you know, and then that person moved, that former preacher, it could be that they're just waiting for you to mess up. If you follow someone who did a fairly good job, it may be that the expectations for you are fairly high. Just depends. But one of the things, you know, we have to wrestle with in these churches are, what about the expectations? What about the expectations we put on ourselves? Well, you know, I just thought this is the way I thought, you know, a minister ought to be, or a minister's spouse ought to be. I just thought, you know, the former minister's spouse, she did this or she did that or whatever. Our last preacher, he always did this, and I guess that's what we're supposed to do. But it's determining. One of the challenges we face is determining what are realistic and what are unrealistic. Okay? Here's a second one. Time challenges. The life of any minister is very busy. Now, I'll tell you, the life of a lot of business people, they're very busy. But we're just talking this afternoon about in a congregational context. The life of a minister can be very busy. Unfortunately, in a lot of churches, there's very little accountability, which means that it's tempting for two people. It's two kinds of people. It's tempting for very lazy ministers to basically do not much of anything for years and just go on. It's also tempting for people who will just work themselves into the ground with very little boundaries, and this person just goes on for years like this. What about this time thing? And what do I do with this time? Basically, you know, if you're looking at a human being, you got to have time to sleep, right? You typically have to have time to work. And hopefully there's a third piece in there somewhere where you're not necessarily working and you're not sleeping. And how's all that going to work out for you? Okay? One of the things that some of us have done when we had a lot of raw energy is we told ourselves, I can outwork anybody. I'll just stay up later. Oh, you want to meet at midnight? No problem. I get up at 5, but you know, I said, no problem, because I want to get up early, early, early. And so for a while, you know, and people will stroke you for that. They'll come, our minister, he's out at midnight sometimes with people. And he meets people for breakfast at 5:30, you know, the next day. And people will, you know, that does something sometimes to an ego. But time challenges. Sometimes when it comes to serving a congregation, there are certain issues related to time that can be very good. One of the things I did, Charlotte and I did, as our kids were growing up, I missed very few ball games. Now, I might start working very early that morning, or I might stay up really late the night before. Yeah, I had that kind of flexibility. That's a good thing, isn't it? But on the other hand, time can also be used in a negative way. Here's number three, emotional challenges. The feeling of not being understood. What do you think? If we were to take a poll among a lot of ministers and spouses, and we were to ask about what is the emotion that often bubbles up for a lot of ministers and families, what would that emotion be? We're talking about other people right now, not you, so don't worry. What would that emotion probably be for other people?
Frustrated that we can't get in.
Frustrated that we can't get in? What else?
Lack of respect.
Lack of respect, maybe? What emotion might bubble up for some?
Just saying.
Absolutely. We're talking about other people. What emotion might bubble up for some? Well, here's one, a real sense of loneliness. Mm-hmm. That I am by myself, and my spouse is very busy, and that my spouse just doesn't understand. And it can go both ways. It can be it may be this minister on staff who feels this way, who feels very, very lonely. I'm not sure who to trust. I'm not sure who to talk to. I'm not sure who I can relate to. I don't know if I need to be talking very openly in this church. You say, well, you shouldn't feel that way. I'm just talking about the way it is. And the spouse can feel that way. I don't know who to be friends with. I was friends with this lady. I thought we were going to be close, and she burned me. And now I'm not sure about opening myself up to anybody else. Chris?
It's kind of a weird, not being understood in a pastor role, especially when you have elders, yeah. who, because they're the pastors, you're not. You're the preacher, so they don't see that you're a pastor also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In other places, besides
yeah.
where I am.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah. Dealing with the criticism of your husband or children or church members. This is a tough one. You know, we had to deal with this with our children when we went to a church and a Sunday school teacher just went off on one of our children once. And, you know, and I'm trying to think, now, how are we going to navigate this one? Or dealing with the criticism of, you know, when you... This family is now going to look around and check out other churches. And, you know, they don't come out and say it, but part of it is your husband's preaching. And that just kind of gets real personal. And what in the world do you do with that? And so this whole bit, these emotional challenges. Here's the number four, spiritual challenges. When Charlotte was a young mother, she was fortunate enough to she stayed home for a few years while our kids were out of school. Well, those are very busy years. My goodness, when you got two little kids and it's like trying to manage Jell-O, and she's doing all of that, and there are just all these things that happen all day long, and then I come home. You know what I've been doing during the day besides, seeing people? A lot of times I'm getting ready to present something. I'm preparing something. I may be reading. And I may be reading a lot. There are these authors, you know, that become, I'm throwing out to my wife. I've been reading. This guy and that person and this one, doing all this. She's home with children. And after a while, it would be very easy, you know, if you're home with children and you can see your spouse is just growing and growing and growing, and your spouse is even using words sometimes that you're not sure you understand what they mean. And I'm wondering why your spouse is using those words. But anyway, this person's using, and seems to be just growing. And your life's not like that right now. And maybe your spouse begins to wonder if you're really very spiritual. Or you begin to wonder that. You think, you know, I'm not like... He gets up in front of the church and says all these things, and, you know, I'm chasing babies and trying to teach one to how to stand in the bathroom at the right, you know, I'll do all that. And you know, it could really be a spiritual challenge for a lot of families. And, you know, when I look back at our early years, I wish I had handled some things differently than I did. When I started preaching, I felt so inadequate and so behind that I was doing everything I could, I felt like, just to keep up. And I didn't have as much of an appreciation for what Charlotte was doing at home, because I was just so full of this insecurity and full of just trying to scramble. Well, you know, this can do some interesting things in a family. Here's a, And then there are various other challenges. Personal depression. Personal depression. Back to loneliness again, but what do I do when I am feeling very, very lonely? And sometimes when there's some depression mixed in with some loneliness, one spouse can begin to pull away. And, I mean, emotionally, kind of just back up and back away. And, you know, that's not a good thing. But what do you do with all that? And here's the third one. Another challenge is church conflict. What does church conflict do to a family that works for the church? When you're a minister's family, you're in a congregation and they're in conflict, what does that do?
It can stir insecurity.
It can stir insecurity, absolutely. That's right, Alan.
It takes away time.
It what now?
It takes away your time.
It can take away your time.
Emotions.
Yeah? What else?
It's insecurity on many platforms because it's not just church conflict, it becomes financial for the pastoral family. You know, it becomes very rubber meets the road. Like, where's our house, our food, or that kind of thing.
Yeah.
The whole thing blows up.
Yeah. You've got this thing that I'm calling just church conflict, and then you realize, man, this thing's got layers. What if? You know, what about, and your mind begins to race. Where will our kids go to school? If we have to move, where will we move? Will we move suddenly? Where? What will we do? Will we live with Mama? What are we going to do? And, you know, if the difference in a family who works for the congregation and somebody who has a regular job, they can. I was on the phone last night with a good friend. Their church is in heavy conflict. Well, my friend is doing his very best to try to be a good, positive presence in that congregation, but they won't move if the church just blows up. My friend won't, that doesn't affect. Moving is not even an issue for them. He's not on church staff. He's got a completely different career, different kind of work. But when there's church conflict and you're a part of a church family, you all kinds of insecurities. Yeah. Well, how are we going to pay our bills and on and on and on?
And not to mention that if you care for the... obviously, if you're working there among that group of people, you care about them. You want the Lord's church in that place. We've invested our time and our lives, and you don't want to see that kind of thing happen.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Here's another challenge: is a strained marriage relationship. A strained marriage relationship. You know, when we were in Kansas City, Missouri, 3 years, and it was just a tough time of life. It was a tough ministry situation. This is a long time ago, but I remember, Charlotte and I I was at a loss as to what to do. She was at a loss to what to do. And the next thing I know, we're sitting in a counselor's office. Now, what do you think that did to my ego, being a pretty insecure person, especially then? And I just thought, this is unbelievable. Al, here we are in a marriage counselor's office, and I'm the guy that preaches on marriage. I'm the guy that preaches to these people. And now, our marriage wasn't about to break up. There was not some big scandal mess or whatever. It's just that we both knew, man, we're not getting anywhere in the way we're trying to do things. And it was one of the best things we've ever done. But it wasn't me it was her. I am so thankful that she really wanted to do that, because I didn't, in my immaturity. And it was genuine immaturity and insecurity. But here's the thing. If I don't deal with that, if I don't deal with that in my family as a minister, I'm just as human as anybody else. Marriages don't get better by neglecting them, do they? And so, you know, I look back at that time, and it was a hard time, but oh, it was so good that we did that. So good that we did that. And I look at our little grandchildren today, you know, and I think, man, I'm sure glad we did that years ago. Because if nothing else, it woke me up, you know? And anyway, here's another one. When you have a rebellious child or a troubled child or a difficult child, and I'm guessing, I mean, I don't know how many are in here, but we got enough. Some of us have had a tough situation with a child. Some of us have had a child who is in middle school or high school or college or is an adult, and it was tough. You know, and if you're a parent, what does it do when one of your children, what does it do to you when one of your children is really having a difficult time? What does that do to you?
Makes me anxious.
It can make you anxious, yes.
Make you worry.
It can make you worry. Yeah, what else?
What makes you feel sometimes like you're a failure, like you haven't done enough for your own child to help them out during that time.
Yes.
You feel like a horrible parent.
Yeah. Some of us grew up with kind of a view of life that that was so unrealistic that we almost became disillusioned. And I'm one of these. I didn't become disillusioned, but I was pretty well shaken because I had a view of life that went something like this. If you grow up and you try to do the right thing and you love the Lord and you marry a good person who also loves the Lord, you'll have children. And those children, we have two daughters, those children, whether you have sons or daughters, they'll grow up to love the Lord, and they'll all marry Christian people who love the Lord, and your life will be really good and be pretty smooth. That may be true for some people. I don't think that's true for a whole bunch of us. You know? I didn't know that I would one day be helping our daughter deal with a divorce. I didn't know that, you know, I would deal with issues in my extended family. The reality is, we grow up, we live in a broken world, we are Christian people, but we are not immune to brokenness and the work of the evil one. And life can be pretty painful. Well, if you grow up with the first view, if you grow up with the first view, then the congregation kind of hears that and looks at that, and the congregation doesn't always know what to do, because the congregation knows their families aren't like that. And so I guess we did something wrong. And so if we've done something wrong, then either I'm going to have to either hide that, or I'm going to have to blame somebody. And what some of us do is we just hide it. Kind of like the couple who told me one day about their son who got out of drug treatment. They said, "We can't tell people at the church. They don't understand these things." Well, you know, the truth is, ministers are not immune to this kind of brokenness. And so, you know, I may have a rebellious child, or I may just have a child who is the victim of something. That's possible. Look at the next one. Burnout. It's a challenge. Burnout. And as a result, all of this can leave a spouse feeling lonely and isolated. It can leave one feeling as if she really doesn't have a home. It can leave a spouse feeling resentful and angry. Now, what I want to do with the rest of this is just mention a few things that might be helpful. Okay? You say, now that you've got us all depressed, I want to mention a few things that might be helpful. These are challenges. These don't come automatically. But I want to mention some friends who might be helpful. One is a challenger kind of friend. A challenger kind of friend. To pray for and desire to have somebody in your life who has a way of challenging you, and you respect this person so much, it's okay that they challenge you. You know what I'm saying? I've got a friend like that. And every time I get around him, he challenges me in a very soft, gentle way that makes me want to be a better man and a better minister. It can really be helpful if there's somebody in my life, and you don't even have to use the word mentor, but if I can look to someone and learn. We've got these two kids, right? You know, our kids are grown. We've got these grandkids. I've never done this before. Now, if you've got little kids, I've done that before. I'm not an expert, but I kind of connected. I had never been the father to two women and the husband to one wife. This is new for me. And so what I have done is I have found some people who I think are good fathers to their adult children. I'm trying to learn some things. I mean, that's a mentor, basically. Okay? That's helpful. These people will not just come to you. Nobody will come, or maybe, I don't think, nobody's going to say to you, I think, let me be your challenger, let me be your mentor, or whatever. And if they do, run. But I'm suggesting that maybe these could be some things we could pray for. I need an encourager. I need an encourager. You know, life's pretty hard. And, you know, I came home the other night. And And Charlotte, the first words out of Charlotte's mouth was, so what did he say? Because she knew the person I was with that day, and she could tell by the look on my face that, you know, and at the end of the day, I want to encourage. Now, let me tell you something. Let me say something about encouragement within ministry families. Encouragement is not patting somebody on the back and telling them it'll be all right, or chin up, or cheer up, or whatever. Encouragement is basically pointing out something that's real and solid and helping them refocus. It might be some encouragement that's in the Lord, and at an appropriate time you're able to kind of point to that. It might be encouragement based upon something that someone's done. One of the things I like to do in the grocery store is if there is a young mother in particular in front of me at the checkout line, and she's wrestling with these two children who are trying to get all the candy off the rack and all. If this is true, And let's suppose that maybe she handles a situation real well. One of the things I do sometimes is I'll just say, man, that was good. You handled that one well. And that's hard because we've tried to do that. I'm pointing out something specific and affirming. Does that make any sense? Yeah. Okay. I need a confidant. And the confidant for you may be in the congregation, and it may not be. I've had both. I found it really helpful to have somebody that I could be completely honest with who is not a part of our congregation. But somebody who I can be honest with. I need a ministry partner. I need a ministry partner. I had dinner not long ago with this guy. He loves his coworker. Those two guys are so thick, and they're both really godly guys. That's a sweet thing to see. It's possible to work with a staff or a group of people where you still feel lonely. You don't feel a connection with anybody. But if you've got a ministry partner, somebody, maybe it's a friend, and you just feel like you can talk to her or him on a certain level. That can be very encouraging. It's so helpful to have old friends. A while ago, somebody's asked me about the Harding School of Theology lunch. We have a lunch here at Pepperdine every year, Wednesday at 11:30. Feel free to come next year. But anyway, part of what I do is I help host that. Well, I can't eat at these lunches, and so I won't go into it, but I just can't. When I'm talking and I'm sort of responsible, I just can't eat at the same time. So what I'll typically do is do the lunch and then go out here where the burgers are and eat. I sat down with a friend I've known since high school. We've got such a connection, he and I. We've had so many experiences together. I cannot afford to lose that friend. I'll never have a friend like him. You can't just find somebody from high school. But I need old friends. I need new friends. That's the wonderful thing about Pepperdine. You may go to breakfast and make a new friend, or be on that the van or the bus, make a new friend. Now, this is just something to think about. Okay? You might just think about. Is there a kind of friend that I need right now more than the others? Maybe this is something to pray about. The back of the sheet, 7 things pastors' wives wish they had been told before they became pastors' wives. This is Tom Rainer. If you don't ever look at Tom Rainer, or if you're not familiar with this, you might want to look at his website. He has just got, whether it's about ministers' families or ministers, lots of resources. I wish somebody had told me just to be myself. Who else would you try to be? What the church expects of you. What the church expects of you. I wish somebody had just told me to be myself. Second, I wish somebody had prepared me to deal with criticism of my husband and me. What will people criticize you for?
Everything.
Yeah, they might criticize you for everything. And some of it just may be silly, and some of it may sting. I wish someone had reminded me that my husband is human.
We keep proving it.
What then?
Husbands keep proving it.
Yeah. One of the things that kind of bothered me one day, Charlotte told me, I think we had just had a difficult weekend, apparently. And she said something like, you're my preacher, but you're my husband too. And sometimes I can't stop listening to my husband, to you, my preacher, because I am so frustrated with you, my husband. And I remember thinking one weekend, sometimes I'll look in the mirror and I'll think, man, what are you doing? You're making this so hard on her, and she's going to sit there and listen to you preach tomorrow. And here you are acting so immature. Anyway, I wish somebody had told me that others were watching us. That others are watching us. Okay? What about that one? Is that true, real?
Especially new preachers.
Especially new preachers. Okay.
I want to know what's going on.
Yeah. Is there a negative kind of watching that we don't like?
Sometimes.
Okay.
Trying to pick somebody apart
or trying to find a flaw. Mm-hmm. Is there? We won't leave it a negative, but go with me for a minute here. Is there a negative kind of watching that we don't like?
Going back to expecting us to be something we're not.
Yeah. Is there a more positive kind of watching that may be okay?
Encouragement.
Yeah.
Modeling.
One of the things I did occasionally at Crestview, and Jordan Hubbard, Jordan and Debbie are there now, but one of the things I did occasionally is I would tell a story where I was the goat, you know. Because one of the things that I need to model is, how do you fail? How do you mess up? Our folks know how to mess up and hide it, don't we? And the model for some of these families is if you act stupid with your wife, you just put that on her. You know, the objective is not to put myself out there as this perfect person, but to in some way be authentic and for them to know that even when I am not at my best, I apologize. I own up. Does that make any sense? Let's finish these. I wish someone had told me there are some really mean people in the church. I can tell you that we've been treated well. Charlotte and I have been in primarily three churches, and we've been treated really well. But I can look at, those churches, and there are a couple of mean people in each one, right? I wish someone had told me how my husband needs me to build him up. When one of the things, Charlotte grew up in a minister's family, her dad preached many years. And so, you know, here she is listening to me every week. I mean, you think this is bad. Imagine listening to me every single week. And she did that. She has done that for decades. And I would ask her on occasion, How did that go? You know, just like, how did that go? And the way she would answer, because she knew it was a pretty fragile thing, she would say, well, that would have been a great series. Well, that was quite a bit of material. And, of course, the truth was, you know, I'd taken the truck, backed it up, dumped it all over the congregation, and drove away. And what I appreciated the candor, but recognizing that I needed that to come my way in a pretty gentle way. And part of that was my own encouragement. I wish someone had told me, number seven, that my schedule would never be normal again. What are the challenges there? Schedule-wise.
Sometimes it's a good thing.
Sometimes it's a good thing.
Flexibility.
Yeah, sometimes it's a good thing.
And sometimes it's Christmas dinner.
Yeah.
You have to take a phone call, or in the middle of a family gathering, and your husband's on the phone in the next room, and a member might need him in a moment's notice.
Yeah.
So it comes in all shapes and sizes, really.
Yeah. So one of the things we pray for his wisdom as we deal with these people. You know, when somebody calls me and we're right in the middle of a meal, or I get this text, not every text, not every call demands that I jump up and get it. On the other hand, when I get this text, there has been a car wreck, and then I do get up, and I get up with the blessing of my spouse if she doesn't go with me. And so, but we have to learn, you know, part of that is this mutual respect. That one, I won't abuse this and just start talking to people because they call, or texting people because they text, but I have to use some judgment about what my family needs and when it's time to respond. Now, I want to close this with some next steps. Number one, consider what kind of presence as a married couple or single person that you're going to be. Most of us, I think, or maybe I'll just say many of us just recoil at kind of an old preacher's wife model. All these expectations. Many of us recoil at that. Okay? On the other hand, it's possible to go to the other extreme where I basically, as a spouse, just disappear. I'm not even present or in the picture. I think one of the things I want to think through, or we want to think through as married people, is what kind of married presence do we want to be in this body? Not somebody else's expectations, not just completely disconnecting, but what fits us so that in some way we use our gifts and in some way we love this church, but it's not imposed. It is coming out of a genuine ministry. Does that make any sense? Look at number two. Pursue friendship with others both in and outside the congregation. Pursue friendships. This is just a reality. You may have found life different, but Charlotte and I have found that most of the time, if we're going to do something, if we want to see something happen, we are going to have to initiate it. I can wait forever for somebody to call me for lunch. I can wait forever for, well, why didn't you ever ask me to coffee? You know, we assume that we're the ones that are going to need to invite people over. I assume that I'm going to have to initiate lunch. I assume I'm going to initiate coffee. And with friendships, I can't just wait for somebody to be my friend. I'm going to have to initiate that, initiate something. And with friendships, sometimes you read it well. You just connect with a person, and other times, oh my goodness, you think, I don't know what I was thinking. This person is nothing like who I thought she was, he was. Okay? But to pursue friendships with others both in and outside the congregation. It was very important to me during those 20 years in Central Texas to have friendships with people in a variety of settings. I was friendships with ministers of other churches, with people who were just business people, people who were just the friends, the parents of our children. It reminded me that the world was bigger than some of the little things we were dealing with at church. And you know, sometimes if your whole world is one congregation, little things can seem bigger than they are. Okay? Well, last few. Listen to the people who care about you most. Listen to the people who care about you most. I know there are a lot of people who want to tell you things and want you to know certain things, and that's true. But what I don't want to do is to ignore the words of the people who love me. And when someone who loves me says, "Man, you are looking really tired," it's easy to blow off things like that. When my wife is telling me, "Boy, you're on edge," I am not. I might ought to listen to that. When my wife is saying, you know, you've been in that recliner for an hour and a half and the television is off, are you okay? I might want to pay attention to that. The people who love me most. It is really helpful as a part of a ministry family to pay attention to these, to pay attention to the people who care the most. One of the things I want to do, number four, is identify and name a behavior for what it actually is. Children are pretty resilient, and children bounce back, but it's not good when I'm making excuses in a family for what these people are doing. When my child sees that a person is mean, for me to just make a bunch of excuses, and when he's acting very mean, or she is, that's not helpful. When I say to my spouse, that guy just lied to me. Now, you really shouldn't use the word lie. That's awfully strong, and I'm sure he meant well, and he's got a good heart, and you know, all that stuff. And that doesn't help. What that says is, you don't want to deal with the reality as I see it, and so I guess I have to talk to somebody else over coffee or something, because you want to call it something else instead of what it is. I don't know. I feel like it's healthy to name a behavior for what it is. And finally, cherish your spouse more than you cherish the congregation. Cherish your spouse more than you cherish the congregation. It's fine for me to model before the church that I love the church. And that's a good thing, to love a congregation. Especially if you're a minister in that church. What may be just as powerful is for the congregation to see that not only do I care and love them, but I cherish my wife. I cherish my husband. And you can tell it in the way I refer to her. And I'm not talking about standing up before a congregation and, you know, going on and on about your wife or your husband, whatever. But just, it's a tone of voice. It's the way you speak about that person. I watched my daddy-in-law deal with my mother-in-law. I wanted to be like him so much. He just had so much integrity. But I'll tell you what I especially liked. I liked the way he treated her. Lynn Anderson told me years ago, he said, you know, when I would look at your father-in-law, I knew I wanted to treat my wife just like he treated May. And it's about cherishing. Well, we're at the end of time. You got two sheets. Here's the deal. If you'll just go over this sheet, I'd circle a few things that were helpful. You can forget the rest if you want. Take a few nuggets that are helpful, and we've had a good hour. Okay? But I hope something was helpful. If nothing else, maybe just something to give some attention to. Okay? I appreciate you, all of you that work with these congregations. I appreciate so much what you do. We are church, and we're about the church. I work with a school. I work with a seminary. I was telling our group at lunch, we're not the main deal. We're not front and center. It's the congregations that are. And so, appreciate so much you being here. Thank you.